Welcome to episode 142 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I recap my recent South by Southwest experience with roommate Lenny Go from Tradable Bits.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who sees far too many inappropriate photos athletes post online, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. I try my best to forget those photos, but never mind. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. Surely you're doing it on Pocket Casts. I think I've mentioned it enough now that everyone should be on board. I'm a big fan of Pocket Casts as an app. If you're looking for a new app to listen to your podcasts, please give Pocket Casts a go. It is worth paying the $3.95 or $4.95. Comparatively, when you think about how much you pay for coffee and the fact that people balk at buying a well-made, well-produced app for $5, sometimes it is a bit of a strange one, but well worth the investment. But please let me know what you listen to podcasts on. You can send me a tweet at Sean Callanan. You can even use the old school method. No, don't fax me. You can send me an email, Sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Happy to catch up with a good friend of mine, Lenny Go from Tradable Bits. Been working with Lenny over the last couple of years with Tradable Bits and doing sponsor activations using the product. Really great product. I highly recommend you check it out. So we roomed together at South by Southwest, checked out some different panels, and so I thought it'd be a good time. We were planning on doing a podcast in Austin, but it was so hectic. And the last thing you want is a hungover podcast. It might have been a bit interesting and maybe a little bit more like my previous podcast, Beers, Blokes and Business. But we didn't do that. We rescheduled once we both got back in Canada and Australia. And so I caught up with Lenny to sort of recap some of the main takeaways that we both had. And stay tuned for after this discussion for a fun fact that links Lenny to our guest from episode 140, the Canucks, Kevin Kinghorn. But now, here is my chat with Lenny Go from Tradable Bits. Very happy to welcome good friend of mine, Lenny Go, Director of Business Development at Tradable Bits. Welcome to the podcast, Lenny.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Long time coming. We've been working together on a few different projects with Tradable Bits over the last couple of years, and wanted to get you on to do a bit of a recap. I did lug my podcasting equipment around the USA for 2 weeks and never once pulled it out. I tell a lie. I did take it out once. I didn't take it out. The TSA took it out. They thought it was inappropriate. They decided to unpack it. I got a full pat down. They broke the battery cover on my Zoom. So thank you very much, TSA. But that's the only time the podcasting equipment came out when I was in the US. So we had to schedule this catch-up to do a bit of a recap of South by Southwest.
Absolutely. I know we definitely talked about doing it, but we were so jam-packed and there's always things to do that we had to be in the moment. But at least we took some notes.
We did take some notes. But yeah, we did think about doing the Sports Geek After Dark podcast, but it would not have been fit for consumption, unfortunately. So what I want to do is sort of, we'll bounce around a few different topics. We've written down a few different takeaways, some of the panels we like, some of our favourite moments. We'll bounce around. We don't know where the conversation will go. We obviously saw a lot of colleagues and friends of the podcast in Austin.
Absolutely.
Starting off, if there was a biggest takeaway or a biggest theme, because South by is always known for that. This is the hot thing. This is the new thing. Did you have a takeaway like that from 2017 South by Southwest?
Yeah, I did. So this was my second South by. I had the pleasure of attending and rooming with you as well. So we kind of got to take in a lot of it together. Last year, I thought everything was all about VR.
Yep.
And then this year, there seemed to be a real shift towards bots. And that was something that I was very interested in digging into and learning as we were going to be developing some of those pieces into our software as well. So I went to a number of bot sessions, and the probably the best one I sat in on was by Dharmesh from HubSpot.
Yep.
And they built out something called GrowthBot. But he had this quote that's really kind of stuck with me. And he said, if chat is the new browser, bots are the new website. And it kind of blew my mind a bit. But it kind of is really true if you kind of think about how bots are being used these days. People are getting lazier and lazier, and they want to, you know, ask and search on a website may not be the most attractive thing to do. So perhaps engaging with a bot and asking questions is a great way to drive you to the next step.
So was that a panel, or was that the workshop where you actually sort of tried to code a bot?
So I went to three different bot sessions. One was where I went and dug in with Trisha Katz. I've dubbed her the Queen of Bots.
Yep.
She likes that title on Twitter. She knows a ton, walked us through lots of different platforms on digging in, rolling up your sleeves. TJ Ainsley and I sat in on another panel just on bots around Kick and just kind of what was out there, what people are doing. It really brought up the whole concept of a new type of what I like to think is a new path for writers, which is conversational UI.
Yep.
So like kind of taking that whole concept of writing for a bot in a personality or things like that. There were some really interesting things like the rollout for the new 50 Shades movie where they had made a Christian Grey bot.
Okay.
And you could talk to it and it has that voice in that way. So
which is an extension of effectively what a lot of teams and the Blazers are one, you know, with TJ and sort of Dwayne, a bot having a personality and replying in a certain way and potentially having a bit of maybe a bit of sass, a bit of snark. So it's not just vanilla if then else replies, it sort of starts having a bit more of a personality, so there's a bit of fun to it.
Absolutely. And that's the I think the attractiveness of having a bot in its own way. One, you can kind of deliver the right information to your fan base, but also engage them in a fun way that would make them want to keep coming back, right? I think it's as fun as having those Easter eggs in Siri where you like, you know, ask Siri what the meaning of life is and you might answer back 42, right?
Yep.
That's amazing.
So that's the thing. There was a fair few panels and discussion, but again, being my first South by Southwest, I'm always interested in the discussion post panels and in the hallways and late at night. And I think there was just as much buzz off the stage about bots. I think you know, I think there was a few of the teams and a few of the people who have been on a pod that were talking about, hey, we're building a bot. We're trying to figure out what a bot looks like for a sports team. We're trying to look at, and I think the bar is so high for a sports team. You know, 1-800 Flowers can build a bot and says, you know, I want flowers. Where do I live? Order me flowers. And it's really binary and very simple. But if you're building a bot for a team, you know, you're going to get this. You know, load testing is going to be super important because every fan's going to use it and every fan is going to test it. They're going to be the most stringent testers of your platform and they'll have the bar set so high. They'll expect to be able to say, I want highlights of my favorite player. I want parking instructions. I want to refund my ticket. I want to order a beer. They'll try everything and it'll be, it's very much. I think the other part of the bots thing was the machine learning. You know how these bots could get better, get smarter, start understand. I guess the functionality that the fans want, but the deliverable of that first bot, you know, is always going to be it's going to be tough because you have to rein in the expectation of fans on what they, you know, what they're going to expect out of that bot. So building it to be, you know, customer service like, and effectively another customer service rep for your stadium is probably the safer thing that you can build out. But then, as you start understanding what your fans want, you can start widening that scope. But it's not a simple thing. But you need to really think about it, and then think of it from that fan's point of view. How are the fans going to react, or at worst, try to break it? And that's going to be a really good scenario to see what sports actually deliver into the market.
Yes, definitely. I completely agree with all your points. That's definitely going to be very exciting for us. So definitely be working with our partners later this year to roll out our bot technology with them in combination of all the other great things they're doing from our fan data platform as well.
Yep.
And giving that an opportunity to have users engage with them. Messenger is a great way to start. I think it's a low barrier to entry.
Yep.
You don't have to have people download an app, and you're only going to get so many fans download your app, but there's over 1.5 billion people on Facebook, right? And fans all over the world. So there's going to be a fantastic way to be able to drive engagement. And like you said, you know, roll them out in phases and really start to understand the types of questions that you're sort of getting from your fans and how you can start to tailor responses that way. So that's kind of the approach we're taking. Learning what types of questions you're having, being able to train your bot, and then being able to create the right types of responses around that and be able to kick, if it doesn't understand or it needs to talk to a live person, kick it over to Slack so that you can do some responses that way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think it is going to be the wiring and the plumbing behind the scenes to get all the different platforms working. So it's the bot and machine learning for a part of it. Then it moves into a live person, as well as having that broadcast element of, hey, here's our latest article, that kind of thing. I think the other thing, you know, I didn't see, like you said last year, that there was that hype around VR, and for mine, it seemed to taper off a little bit. It hadn't progressed as much from last year to this year. There wasn't as much hype around VR. There was a little bit of a lot of the, you know, I think Gary Vee said it best when he had a whole room full of people. And he said, VR's just not there yet. Put your hand up if you know someone that spends an hour a night, an hour a day on VR that doesn't work in the industry. And there was no hands because it hasn't quite gone mainstream. But I think some of the developments, and I think, you know, even just in the last week, you know, Facebook 360 available now for everybody via their phone, which is ridiculous considering, you know, the opportunities that are there. I think it's just going to keep building as more and more content gets into the market, those type of implementations will start coming. Of the activations that we went to, I really enjoyed the Sony one that had a few VR examples in there. We were walking around with the goggles on, trying to play a game of tag with different, right, different views.
Yeah, it was very GoldenEye.
It was a little bit, but I think the implementation of VR is still coming, and I think as we get more, like our feeds will start being flooded with, you know, Facebook 360 video that's live, and you know that sort of immersive element, and we'll get past the oh that's cool and moving our phone around, and we'll start going, no, I really want to consume that type of content with a headset. You know, I think then that will sort of build, but you know, my sort of takeaway from South By, it's still not quite there, but there's a lot of people working on the pieces that will potentially take it mainstream.
Absolutely. And I think last year when I was at South By, all the activations had something around VR, and I noticed so many of them just really kind of skipped that this year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of indicative, I think, a little bit of like that whole hype on what the new hot tech is.
Yeah. And you know, for mine, like I was, as someone who sort of watched South By from afar and being my first one and seen, you know, platforms like, you know, I think it was Periscope 2 years ago, Meerkat 2 years ago, you know, Twitter was born there. There's a whole bunch of these apps have been born there. There wasn't a really new, bright, shiny thing. It was really just an extension of the current platforms. Like, I didn't see, like, that was a bit disappointed from my point of view. I thought Snapchat and Spectacles were going to make a bigger splash at South By.
Right.
You know, I had my specs. There was a few other people that had their specs. We did see.
Yeah, you were all over it with the specs.
We did see one vending machine for specs, but we did not. I expected, you know, post-IPO, you know, that was a success and starting to, they must have just not had enough product to put it out there because I expected a bigger presence from Snapchat and to say, hey, if we're a if we're a camera company, you know, they should have wanted everyone walking around with specs. So I thought that was surprising as far as there wasn't a really big, you know, buzz trend where you could just hear it around because we were still, you know, you saw me with the specs and people still did not know what those, what the glasses were.
That's true. You're pretty cutting edge guy, right? But, at the same time, I did notice, I was quite surprised that of the amount of other people that I saw with specs as well. And I mean, of all places, South By is going to be the spot where people are going to use that type of technology as well.
Yeah. So I think there was a panel that I jumped in on specs and sports and I think there was maybe 12 or 15 people there and we all took a photo together and we all took a group, I guess, a spec snap. And, you know, it was almost like, oh, this is almost a world record of the amount of people in the same room we're wearing spectacles. I just expected there to be more. I think the other, it's not really a trend, but it's more of a confirmation, especially for everybody who, a lot of, you know, that I listen to or I talk to on the podcast is storytelling is alive and well. It is so, you know, some of the best panels that I went to were all about how to tell a story from a content point of view and how to use the different platforms. I went to a really good session with the guys from Bleacher Report and the Kick-Ass, sort of using that comedy, sports comedy element and the content mm-hmm. they're producing, which I think they're doing a really good job. We also were, you know, sort of a fluke of the schedule when I saw the Frank Oz Muppet Guys Talking documentary and having them talk about, I guess, the aspects of storytelling and character building and stuff around the Muppets. If you haven't, again, I don't know if it's available for download or whatever, but if you go to Muppets Guys Talking, and the way you remember that is if you say Muppet Guys Talking, .com. Lucky enough to see that documentary and then see Frank Oz do a Q&A with Leonard Maltin. You know, there were so many things that were similar to good team dynamics, how people should work together, how you tell a story.
It was a great metaphor for startup culture.
Yep.
Something that we find at our team, we're a small group, about 10 to 12 plus, and it's all about finding good people and like just like they were sort of saying, it's like getting the right people who will kind of do with teamwork and that collaborative creative process, putting the egos aside and doing what's best for the good of the team, but also being able to like go through thick and thin, right? Like no matter what, and work at all hours to make it happen. Like when Jim Henson's going to be doing the song while he's sitting in some barrel in the pond for like hours on end, he'll do it for the best shot and then what is good for the team.
Well, yeah, that, I mean, to explain that, that scene, you know, not to spoil the movie, but, in the Muppet movie where Kermit the Frog is sitting on a log in the middle of the lake, Jim Henson had to sit in a 44-gallon drum in underwater with his hand coming out behind the log. And he had to be in there for like 4 hours. And the way Frank Oz was describing it, it's like, well, that's leadership. You can't tell, you know, you can't tell your staff to work, you know, work overtime and push themselves if you're not going to also put yourself in that position. And it was very much one, how Jim Henson led, but then also how super talented people, you know, can work together and not have that, you know, show Kobe Shaq type of thing. Someone has to be alpha dog, sort of thing to work with. So, yeah, I thought it was a little bit of, you know, because I deliberately went, you know, I was going to some of the sports sessions because I wanted to hear certain people or hear from certain teams. But then there was a couple of times where I went, no, I'm going to, I guess, stretch myself, go to a different panel that I'm not expected to go to, because otherwise I'll always be, you know, patting everybody on the back and we're all talking and nodding our heads about the same things. I wanted to go to a few things, and that's sort of why I went to the Muppets one. It was a little bit of, you know, childhood hero and childhood memories of watching the Muppets growing up, but also, you know, Frank Oz is an absolutely legendary storyteller. And it was funny because I've told a few people that we saw Frank Oz and everyone was like, did he do Fozzie's voice? Did he do Yoda's voice? And they were really particular in saying, we're not voice actors.
Yeah,
we're puppeteers and the voice is, right? The voice is only half of the performance. So he didn't, you know, he didn't dumb down or he didn't, you know, betray his craft by going, you know, waka waka waka. But, you know, which would have been great. It would have been great if he, you know, left a voicemail and said, you know, it was Yoda and said, Sean's not available, don't leave a voice message. That would be awesome. But he, some of the takeaways are, I guess, round the way their team worked, the way that they had fun, the way that they were all, like they were always trying to break character and trying to make the scene difficult. And
they were always taking the piss out of each other.
Exactly. They were busting each other, but it sort of pushed them all to another level. So that competitive juice is sort of kicking in. Can I perform at this level and take all the heat underneath? So. Yeah, I really love that. I will keep an eye out. Thanks for the tip, Adam Martin. He sort of did tell us that a lot of the talks will be available on the SoundCloud channel, and they're starting to filter through now. So hopefully I can find the Frank Oz chat with Leonard Moulton. But, yeah, definitely check out Muppet Guys Talking if you're ever a fan.
The stories that they had were amazing. Just being able to get into the process of creating each character and how they came about, the origin story. Oh, it was just such a cool one. I know you, me, and TJ were all big Muppet fans. Yep. So I think we all really enjoyed that. And just some of the pranks they would pull on each other were so hilarious. So I don't want to spoil anything. Guys, you have to watch it if you're a fan of the Muppets.
And so then the other part of the storytelling piece, which was very much interesting for me as a podcaster, was listening to the ESPN team, the from the 30 for 30.
Dan versus team, Dave.
And they're building out a 30 for 30 podcast series. So same format as the movies. So if you've watched the 30 for 30 movies, you know, some really good sports documentaries, and it was very interesting to talk for them to talk about, you know, how to translate that storytelling into an audio format. And I've sort of, you know, in discussing 30 for 30, you know, as someone who consumes a lot of audio, and I could go to my pocket cast stats to look at it. I might share it online. I think I did it recently in the Slack. I thought that potentially you could take the Bad Boys doc or the Reggie Miller Knicks doc or the O.J. Simpson 1994 doc, and you could just listen to them, because a lot of it is just talking, you know, interviews with people behind the scenes and sort of pieces the story together. But what they said is, you know, audio is different. It needs the back announce. You need to have someone describe who's the next person to talk. Those kind of things. And so that was one of the first things they did when they were starting to go into the audio space, is just listened to the movies with just audio. And it, you know, for them, it said it didn't work. Now, you know, maybe they are harder markers. But yeah, it's a different editing process. It's a different storytelling process to do that. So it's going to be interesting. I think it was June. I think June is when the 30 for 30 podcast come out. One of their first ones is Dan versus Dave, which is, for those who don't know, it's from the Barcelona Olympics, a couple of decathletes,
yeah.
That were one and two in the world, two Americans that were, pretty much favoured. And it's as much about their rivalry and also the Reebok ads that came around where it was Dan versus Dave. I won't spoil it as much as they did at South By, but it does sound like a fascinating story. We're lucky enough. Thank you from Tracy Kaplan from TuneIn to invite us to the live, I guess, live read and interview with Dan and Dave on the final night. You know, so I think again for me, it will be another way to get more people into podcasts, and for me, that's good.
Oh, for sure. And myself, I've been getting into podcasts more. Obviously, I listen to, you know, Sports Geek, my favorite podcast. But other than that, I'm a 30 for 30 junkie. I love all that sort of stuff. And just to have more bite-sized content to listen to where maybe I'm walking to a meeting or I'm in the gym or doing something is great. And I think there was one amazing point that when we sat in on the panel for 30 for 30 that I never thought about is they always get pitched great ideas for 30 for 30s. And they're like, oh, that's awesome. It's like, what kind of footage do you have? And they're like, don't have any. And that's where they're like, okay, well, this is where podcasts can come in.
Exactly.
And I never thought about that, but then you can always set the audio stage and sound stage for this. You can add like great background music to add to the drama and like the, you know, throw in clips from a call or, in a game or an interview. And you can really kind of like, you know, easily close your eyes and picture it all there. And I think that's the amazing thing about taking 30 for 30 into a podcasting realm.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where I think they'll do well. And then the thing is, what can sports learn from that? And I think there's a real, I talked to the guys at the Pistons about their podcast. I talked to TJ about the podcasting stuff that they've done with the Trailblazers, you know, the Trail, which is more of a documentary behind the scenes, evergreen type of content, which I think is underutilized in the world of sports. Like, you know, you can go and find out, you can listen to the podcast on the Trail. There's an episode there on the genesis of the logo. Mm-hmm. And so they talk about how it came about and that kind of thing. Whereas, talking to the guys at the Pistons who do a Wired podcast with Jake Chapman, they're doing a news podcast where here's the latest news. We're talking to a beat writer. And that those two podcasts have different consumption habits around them. And so what you need to do is figure out which, you know, for the effort, producing, say, a daily or a weekly news podcast, or the effort to produce a documentary-style podcast, which might take a little bit longer and a bit more research and a few more interviews and a bit more work on the editing side, you know, what value do they have from a length of engagement with the fan, both of, one, do they deeply engage and listen to the whole 20, 40 minutes, however long it is, but then also, can you, over time, continue to build that audience for that piece? So I think that's the piece where sports fans and sports executives will listen to 30 for 30. And like you just said, there's so many really good stories that you can deep dive on that you know will both be loved by your rabid fans, you know, your digital cheer squad that consume everything, but also go much wider. Because it can be pitched to a casual fan or just a, you know, it's really just a human interest story. And mm-hmm. So they're the pieces where I think, you know, I think the smart sports teams will go, we want to do our own 30 for 30. Now, it doesn't mean you have to do 30 episodes. You can do four. You do four high quality 30 to 40 minute pieces. It's going to make, you know, and it's really going to connect with a whole bunch of fans. And the thing is, It's a very sponsorable product.
Oh, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to say there's another avenue for sponsorship for sure.
Yeah, and so like, you know, you're seeing now that obviously ESPN jumping into the market, you know, what The Ring is doing, what Gimlet are doing, they're validating the advertising market. Yes, there's still issues around metrics and what people want, but more and more, as these type of podcasts come out, you'll have more sponsorship executives and people and partners that are listening to podcasts. So you don't have to convince them.
You just it makes it a viable medium for them now.
Oh, potentially. If you speak to someone who's one of your sponsors and they're a podcast fan, it's not that hard to say, oh, do you want to sponsor our podcast? We're doing this. So I think that's still a real big opportunity, and I'm really excited about what ESPN are going to do in the space.
Absolutely. One of the other huge takeaways for me, shifting gears, is esports.
Yep.
I think we both sat in on this amazing panel tied to esports and stadiums, the stadium of the future. And I mean, for me, basically what the panel was, they had a number of esports experts, someone from the league, someone was an advisor, someone from ESPN, and It was just talking about the stadium of the future. So actually building a stadium for esports itself and what that would sort of look like, but also like what the climate of esports is like currently and how it's evolving. And you know, that's a hot topic these days.
Well, you know, we had Stan Press. So the panel was, and I hope they do put up the audio, why esports needs a Coliseum. And I'll put my hand up. I went in there thinking it's the wrong way around. Like, there's all these fans that are watching online. The streaming numbers are ridiculous. You know, I don't think esports needs to take its eye off the golden goose, so to speak, to go, we need to be in stadiums. I think there's a bit of an and or, not an or. You know, it was interesting to hear Wim Stocks from World Gaming. He was sort of in that sort of case as well, to go, we've got it pretty good so far. You know, stadiums aren't the be all and end all, but you know, listening to, I'm going to muck up his name, Brian Merakian, I think, from Populous. Like, so Populous build stadiums, but they were talking about doing, you know, building esports specific stadiums, which, you know, I just did not think, you know, is you know, required. But they were talking about having seats with haptic feedback, so you're sitting there and you're feeling the gunshots or the parts of the game as they're happening on the big screen.
I love the talk about personalization and things too, like when you're walking into the stadium and it recognizes you and there's hello and your gamer handle or things like that. Those kind of blew my mind. But I think the cool thing about it is they were talking about it in, you know, this could be a decade from now rather than this needs to be done tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it kind of opened up the idea of like, this is what the future for esports could be like.
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, at the moment, I think they did play their world championships, and I'm sure Tom Halls will correct me in the sports biz Slack if I get this wrong. I think they played it at Staples last year and it was full. And, you know, so they're going to play in traditional stadiums because that's what's there. And you're right, in, you know, 5 or 10 years, as these leagues develop, you know, they'll figure out where they're best placed. I think Wim was talking about that they're rolling out and doing a lot of events in cinemas, you know, and that's working for now. So it's a matter of finding, I guess, what that you know, what that piece is.
Yeah, in Canada they have a Cineplex, it's this big movie theater group, and a big part of the every time you go into the preview for movies and stuff like that, they're plugging a lot of the gaming tournaments that they're doing. And I think that's a good space for them right now as they're starting to grow, because, you know, they don't have to fill gigantic stadium or place. It's a good spot, gigantic screens, you know, and they're getting the turnout for that. So doing tournaments all the way across Canada in the movie theaters is a great way for them to get going.
But the other thing is, from a, you know, how do we monetize our fan base? That's why events are very appealing for esports, because if the appetite is there to go watch the games, you know, that's why it is appealing to have more events. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops. It's not, you know, you're right, it's not in the next year and a half we'll start seeing stadiums that are specific for esports popping up, but what we'll see is stadiums starting to morph to be more esports friendly and you know, and just standard stadiums building out and running more esports events and starting to figure out what the fan base is like, how they interact, what they're like in real life. Like, I think that's what a few stadium operators will find out over the next couple of years. And then I think, you know, firms like Populous will be building out a stadium of sorts that has more of an esports focus.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if something like that shows up on a large gaming producer's campus or something like that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, that's pretty much how it's going to happen. And the good thing is now, thanks to AP Style Guide, we now know how to spell esports. It's just it's lowercase e, lowercase s. Everyone has to go back to all their blog posts and change e-sports. Like, I'm quite happy that now someone has finally definitively said esports. It's just a word, no capital S. Please move on. Nothing to see here. So
just to touch on the last thing on esports is the thing that kind of though, was a really cool takeaway for me, and I think I went up and asked this question, is just talking about the true equality in esports. So the concept of being able to have a true co-ed team in men and women playing on a level playing field was, I think, a pretty interesting concept. Now you actually don't have anything that is a physical advantage, someone being stronger or anything like that. You have a completely level playing field, and I think that can be a boon to esports marketing for women.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it was almost like, I remember you asking, it was almost like, oh yeah, it's not an issue because everyone's a gamer. Like, yeah, that it's not something they've ever addressed. Because, you know, everyone's effectively anonymous. They have their gamer handle. The gamer handle doesn't have a pink dress on it or a blue mark against it to say you're a male or female. They're just gamers. And so, you know, it's a bit of you're playing at someone and then you find out that it's a woman. It doesn't matter. So, yeah, I think it is unique. As much as, you know, we're seeing a whole bunch of development in women's sport, you know, especially over here in Australia with a lot of leagues popping up, it is an advantage for esports, both from a player point of view, but then also from a fan and a consumer point of view, that it doesn't potentially matter, and it's not something they're trying to address. So they're automatically presenting their product to 100% of the market. They're not having to tweak it, you know, to have a particular round where, you know, all the players wear pink or things like that, that say, oh, now we're ticking that box from a quality and diversity point of view. They've sort of just got that straight out of the gate.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's such a cool thing about esports.
I think the other thing, one of the other takeaways is, and it's funny because I can't remember, I had someone, apologies for not remembering the name, I'll find it. Now I've got to go find it. I had someone who emailed me recently, and I'm going to, if I try, I know the name, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I don't want to get it wrong. But he was talking about how Corny, there it goes, it was Corny. He emailed me and said, I'm listening to the podcast, but I'm, you know, I don't have the scale. Like, you know, he's in Estonian football. I can't do all the things that other teams are doing and the guests that you're talking about. And my reply, and it was pretty much played out in South by Southwest, scale and the ability to tackle things is completely relative. And I think that was borne out when we had Russell Stepford from Barcelona recently in the job there at Barcelona, sitting next to Jamie Tabor from Leicester. And, you know, both had a lot of success in the last 12 months. And I think Russell was talking about the size of the digital team for Barcelona, and he said, you know, it's, I think someone asked, what's the size of your team? And he said 75 people. And Jamie, you know, quickly quipped, that's how many people, that's the total amount of people who work at Leicester almost. and there was a lot of people, you know, jaws dropping in the room. Now, Russell did go to explain that did include a 24/7 dedicated TV channel for Barcelona, which takes a lot of resources. And they're effectively sporting 14 teams across multiple sports, such as the Barca brand. So it's not a small undertaking when you put it like that. But the thing is that Jamie's sitting there with the smaller Leicester team, or Corny sitting there with the small, even smaller Estonian team. It's just a matter of tackling what you can tackle, proving that what you're trying to tackle has worked, bringing in revenue from that, and your team will grow. Everyone who's listened has been through that, you know, been through that sort of journey. So it's, you know, it's obviously you can't go and say, I want to tackle everything with your resources. It's defined by your resources. But if you go and show success, and success is defined in multiple ways, selling tickets, selling sponsorships, bringing in digital revenue, it might be just growing your fan base. And then that proves to your sponsors and more money comes in. But you've just got to focus on that piece. And it will grow. It's just that you're, you know, a bit further behind, because, you know, 7 years ago, teams were teams of one or two. So it's, to me, you know, scale is relative. And there was a few people in the audience looking at, oh, we can't do what Barca does. because they're so big, and they sort of had a similar sort of, you know, I guess shrugging of the shoulders, like, we can't do that. And it's like, my philosophy is, of course, you can do it. You can tackle as much as you want and grow. It's sitting there in front of you. So that's always been one of my takeaways. It's something I always try to, you know, relate. You know, this is what Barcelona do. This is what Arsenal do. This is what your team can do to get to that, to start delivering to that level. You know, so it's just a matter of, you know, focusing on the right things, and your team will grow with you know, if you're pointing your team in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's about working smarter and having the, you know, right partners and right tools and things like that. That you don't need to be a gigantic either. So
exactly, and you just got to focus on the on what is needed for your team. You know, so that Barca is a, you know, super unique example. I'll get it wrong. Is it 270 million? Fans socially around the world? Like, that's a ridiculous number. So they're working on this global scale, whereas, you know, you, from your point of view, whether you're an NBA team, an NFL team, or a you know, football team in Estonia, you've got to focus on what you need to do. And if it's, hey, we're going to get people into the stadium, that's your focus, that's your sole focus. And if you can get that box ticked, then away you go. Was there any other panels or speakers or anything that I guess took your fancy that you enjoyed?
I think there was a funny one that we both sat in on, was the weird startups of Japan.
The weird startups of the University of Tokyo.
Yeah. There were some interesting, like, funny, interesting things there. I mean, the previous year, I was really astounded by when we walk the expo floor, especially in the Far East, and seeing some of the tech stuff that they were developing over there. It was just kind of wild, something like I never would have dreamed of. And I think we saw some interesting ones there, like the guy who had a bot or something to sing "We Are the World" in the voice of Hillary Clinton.
Oh yeah, he had a voice changer bot where you could program it to say anything. But it also
would be great, because I've always wanted to be able to have Morgan Freeman narrate anything that I'm doing. So that would be a cool way.
So, but the thing is, a lot of them they weren't just, hey, let's just do silly things. Like they pretty much said University of Tokyo is one of the leaders in the world in robotics, because the Japanese population is aging, and if they don't get robots working, they'll have a whole bunch of people that can't function because they need help in just their daily lives. And so, like, there's a really big need for them to be leaders in robotics. So, totally. So, you know, it was a great BuzzFeed headline to get us in the door. But again, really interesting in sort of figuring out what they're doing. We need to wrap this up, because I've just looked at my calendar, just said I've got another meeting in nine minutes. From a takeaways point of view, quick recap. Anything else from the off the panel site, the parties and the things around South By? Any main highlights from there?
Well, hanging out with you was a lot of fun. I think we met a ton of people. I think the Facebook Sports thing was good. I think what we had 15 plus sports.
There was a few podcast guests there, and so thank you for Jacob and Kevin Cote both being guests for inviting us along. It was good to hear, I guess, what they're looking to do, and I guess, you know, the developments that we just spoke about before, Facebook Live and 360, and the work that the Kevin Cotes of the world have to do with the leagues to sort of free up the rights.
I think I remember one thing that we saw from presentation that I thought was pretty cool, with sports teams are going to be able to drive a feature for donations to charitable causes via a button. I think that's going to be fantastic for the sports teams out there.
Yeah, definitely. Then we had an absolute blast at the Zendesk party with the guys at Hootsuite, and I'm really thankful that we are now part of a controversy that has caused the Canadian government to put a worldwide ban on cardboard cutouts of your prime minister.
Justin Trudeau is a pretty popular guy, and he was spotted all over Austin.
Yeah, and so now, sort of since that, the Canadian government has forbid cardboard cutouts be made of Justin Trudeau, because he might have been seen, I guess, crowd surfing at a Zendesk party. But he was a very most loved piece of cardboard in South By, I must admit.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think for mine, I'm still in recap mode for mine as far as, you know, will I go back to South By next year? You know, for me, the positives, love catching up with all the people and, you know, the friends that were there. I think if they're going to continue the sports track, they need to do a bit better in promoting it to the sports market. I still, you know, in my visits prior to South By and then post, there was a lot of people that go, oh, I did not realise it had a sports track. So I think that's a bit underwhelming as far as they should have got more representation from sports execs there. But the, you know, so for mine, that's always that, you know, it's always the people that make a conference. And so for that way, it's a big tick. So it's just a matter of, you know, what, if there is going to be a sports track, how it's going to be framed will probably determine it. I think there's always stuff to learn and see, around South By. But yeah, I'll probably assess it again next, I guess, this time, or, you know, this time or earlier next year, and probably submit a panel and see where I go. What about yourself? Are you thinking in or out for South By next year, or still in assessment mode?
Assessing, but I always find a good place in at South By, just in general, because of our technology and that we touch many other areas aside from sports. Perhaps we'll be delving more into the music side next year, since that's a big part of our business as well. So, which will be great to catch a little bit more concerts and stuff like that too, as an added bonus.
Definitely. So before we close things off, I've got the Sports Geek Closing Five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yeah, I think it was 1990, Canucks versus Winnipeg Jets, Pacific Coliseum.
Okay.
I think it was 4-2, but I don't remember who.
Okay. All right.
All I remember is that I got a Canucks puck out of it. I was a pretty happy little kid.
Oh, very awesome. And your favorite food to consume at a sports event?
Wow, I'm pretty Canadian, so shout out to BC Place and my Vancouver Whitecaps, the short rib poutine.
Oh my goodness! All right, I'll have to take your word for that. I'm still not convinced of poutine, but I will leave that with you. So, what's the first app you open in the morning?
Right now, I'm opening my fantasy sports hockey pool because I'm in playoffs. But
about fantasy sports. My fantasy, I've led the league. I'm 12 games in front in first place, and my team is in a tanking injury nightmare.
Oh no!
Kevin Durant out. Reggie Jackson being sat because the Pistons are falling like crazy. It's been a nightmare. I've literally led the league from go to woe, and I'm going to fall over on the last week. So anyway, I don't sound bitter, do I?
No, not at all.
So if it's not fantasy sports, what would be the app that you would be opening?
You know, it's either Reddit or my Gmail or calendar.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there someone that the Sports Geek podcast listeners should be following, and why?
Well, obviously yourself.
Well, if they're listening now, then they probably are. So that's a given. But that was not paid for or endorsed by me. No. Can you nominate someone else?
It's specific to sports business.
It can be anything. It can be
Players Tribune. I'm a huge fan of those guys and the stories that they're telling. Again, going back to your whole storytelling thing.
Yep.
And I don't know if you're a hockey fan at all for anyone out there, but James Duthie and Bob McKenzie from TSN are amazing, and they both have pretty good podcasts as well.
Okay, very good. And Kevin Durant style, what is your what social media platform is your MVP?
From the business side, definitely Facebook. Which basically Facebook is Instagram, so tying those things together.
Yep.
For me personally, Reddit and Twitter, mostly because GIFs make me funnier. So
they do. You're pretty funny in real life, but yeah, you're much funnier with GIFs.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So thank you very much for one putting up with me while we're away. You're a terrific roommate. Where can, other than people talking to you in the Sports Biz Slack, because you're an active member of the Sports Biz Slack community. Where else can people find you?
So they can find me on Twitter at LennyGo, LennyGoh. That's probably a great place to hit me up.
Yep, so hit up Lenny either on Twitter, hit him up on LinkedIn, or send him a message on Slack. Definitely talk to Lenny about tradable bits. We've had a lot of success using tradable bits around engaging fans and just getting more data out of fans, and then, you know, pivoting that data into the ads part of it, which is, you know, what you were just saying there before about Facebook being the MVP, and you've made a really good product that is built on that ad tech and that network that Facebook is building out. And so that, to me, that's the advantage.
Absolutely. Fan data for personalization, that is the ultimate. And I think everybody wants a piece of that these days.
So thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm sure we'll talk soon, either in Skype or in Slack. And thanks for coming on the podcast, and thanks for your time at South By.
Thanks, Sean. It's been a pleasure.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Lenny Go. Please send him a gift. Send him a gift. Actually, you can. You can send him a gift, but send him a GIF. I'm not going to call it GIF. It's a GIF. Send him a GIF via Twitter, at Lenny Go, to show that you listen to the podcast. I'm sure Lenny will be more than happy to reply with an appropriate GIF in return. That fun fact that I promised you that we didn't actually get to in the podcast, how is Lenny connected to Kevin Kinghorn? Oh, well, during the 2011 playoff run, Lenny actually worked with Kevin as a web intern through that playoffs. So there you go. It is a very small world. And you know what makes that world a little bit smaller? The Sports Biz Slack community. We're just flying past 850 on the roadmap for 1,000. So please, if you have a colleague that wants to join and you're in there, please send them to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. If you're not in there, please sign up now. Terrific discussion being had across multiple channels. And was also one of the takeaways for me from South by Southwest was meeting people in real life from the Sports Biz Slack. And, you know, that's the awesomeness of the Sports Biz Slack. It sort of feels a little bit like early Twitter, way back when in 2009, 2010, you knew everybody on Twitter and you would converse with them and meet them in person and feel like you know them. Now Twitter has a bit too much noise. I think there's a bit of that in the Sports Biz Slack. So if you want to connect with some really smart people, including people like Lenny and a lot of former guests of the podcast like Kevin and Mac on previous episodes, they're all in there. Guys like TJ Ansley from the Portland Trailblazers as well. They're all part of the Sports Biz Slack. So get involved. You know, if you've got a question for me, I'm more likely to answer it there than I am if it comes through on a Twitter DM, which I rarely check because there's so much spam in there. But I did have a question for this podcast, and it sort of came out of my discussion with Lenny around bots, and it was one of the trends at South by Southwest where there was a few, if it wasn't really, you know, there was a few panels and things on it, but it was also just the buzz in the hallways around talking to different teams that are developing their own bots. Do you have your own bot strategy? Are you looking at the different tools and techniques and frameworks that are out there? What do you want your bot to deliver? Is it a one bot fits all? Is it different bots? If you want to discuss it, please, more than happy to take some time and have a call with you. How do you book a call with me? You can simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call and book in a time. I'm more than happy to talk to people who are listening to the podcast, because I very much appreciate your listenership. So until next episode, either drop me a line via that, send me a message on the Sports Biz Slack, or use that old-fashioned method of sending me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on facebook.com/sportsgeek. Check out which teams work with SportsGeek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.